Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Deeper Dating Podcast. I'm Ken Page. I am a psychotherapist. I am the creator of the Deeper Dating Intensive and deeperdating.com and the author of the best-selling book, Deeper Dating. And I am so happy to be here with you tonight. And we are going to talk about the kind of things that come up when you enter into a new relationship. And they're things that really don't get talked about much that we're going to be going over together. Insights that were really important to me in early relationships and that I've been able to help a lot of people with as well over the years. But first, I just want to say that if you're interested in the deeper dating path to richer, more authentic intimacy, just go to deeperdatingpodcast.com. You can sign up for my mailing list. You will get a wonderful free ebook of my most viral ideas. You can also get that by just going to deeperdatinggifts.com. And if you sign up for my mailing list, you will get lots of resources, free information, find out about the work that I'm doing, and you'll also on the website be able to see transcripts of every episode. So with that, I am going to begin.
If you've ever been disillusioned, disappointed, or discouraged in your search for love, and you know there has to be a better way to find the healthy, soul-filling love you've always longed for, then you've discovered the podcast for you. I know, as Ken's work personally has led me to find the love of my life. So here's your host of Deeper Dating, Ken Page.
So I think the big question that people ask up front in early relationships, well, there are a few big questions. And I think that some of the key questions are, is this something that could be a viable long-term relationship? Should I get my hopes up? Should I let myself fall if that seems to be happening? If it's not really happening, how long should I wait to see if it does happen? What do I do with my needs? What do I do with my asks? What do I do with my feelings? A part of me wants to wait with them. A part of me wants to put them out. Where am I being too much? Where am I being not enough? Am I attracted enough? Are they attracted enough to me? You know, these are all of the kind of questions that we live with and live through when we are in early dating. So I'm just going to talk about, like, I think some of the key ones that we don't get taught how to handle. But first, I'm just going to go over like some of the basics. So one thing is that you want to know that you are in what I call an attraction of inspiration versus an attraction of deprivation. We all have two circuitries of attraction. I talk about this all over the place, so I'm not going to go into it in too much detail, but you have two circuitries of attraction. It's very binary. Obviously, there's a huge spectrum, but those are that you can be attracted to people who can't really accept you quite for who you are, but sometimes they can. Maybe people with whom the sex and the intimacy is just amazing, but then they disappear. They like you, but they don't like you enough. They like you enough, but they don't want to commit. They are authentic, but then sometimes they're dishonest, et cetera, et cetera. And in cases like that, we feel like we're so close to the dream that we want that we kind of accept things that we shouldn't accept. And we put ourselves down and we stop listening to our nervous system and our intuition because we want it to work so much. And we want to prove to the other person that we are worth their changing for us. This feels like the path to love, but it's the path to hell. And these are attractions of deprivation, and they feel like love, and they guide us astray, and we can get lost in them for years. Attractions of inspiration are a whole different beast. And for those of us who are used to the other kind of attractions, it takes a lot of learning to recognize these wonderful attractions and to actually build attraction in a healthy relationship with an available person. But it is doable. And the entire work that I teach is a map to help you find those relationships and then create those circuitry shifts where you can build home in a relationship like that, which is so absolutely beyond worth it. I'll be right back after this. If you're interested in accelerating and deepening your search for love, I want to invite you to a very special project, the Deeper Dating Intensive. I only offer it twice a year, and it's a 6-month journey working closely with me and an amazing community to transform each member's search for love. And you can learn more at deeperdatingintensive.com. And if it feels like a match, on that page, you can set up a free one-on-one session with me to explore possibilities. I look forward to connecting if this speaks to you. Welcome back. So, attractions of inspiration are attractions where the person is appropriately available. They are attractions where you are inspired by this person's goodness, by their ethics, by the way they live their life, by their capacity to live life, by their generosity, by their willingness to be truth-telling, even when it's hard, their willingness to be, their choice to be kind, even when it would be easier not to be kind. These beautiful characteristics are the ones that can create a lifetime of happiness. And when they are mixed with romantic and sexual attraction, that's the sweet spot. That's where we get to build a beautiful home in the world. That is what we want. And all the work that I teach is a map to help you be able to get there. So you want to think, is this an attraction of deprivation? Is it an attraction of inspiration? Two things that I always say are, if the person has a serious active addiction, or if they have a serious psychiatric disorder that is not stabilized, be very careful. You want to enter into a relationship with someone who does not have an active addiction, if at all possible. Now, if you're in a relationship with someone who is in an active addiction and you're connected to them, I would say Al-Anon, Naranon. Those programs are incredibly, incredibly helpful. But if you're starting from scratch, it's better to have the person be sober if they have had an addiction problem and if they have any serious psychiatric conditions, that they get help and that they get stabilized. So important for the happiness of your relationship. Now, does that mean that every relationship with someone who is an active addict won't work, that the person won't change, that every relationship with someone with serious psychiatric conditions that are unstabilized won't work? No, it absolutely doesn't mean that. But to build a future of happiness, it is wise not to enter into those situations until the person has developed some kind of sense of control. You want to be with someone who is not a narcissist. You want to be with someone who is honest and truth-telling, someone who pretty much has their life together. So this is a big one. Someone who's willing to do the hard work of relationships, who's really willing to listen, who's willing to share, who has loyalty, honesty, and that there is a sense, this is something I say all the time, that you want to have this nervous system reaction where in the most essential way, you feel safe and seen with this person. So these are some of the really important basics, and you want to know what conflict is like with them as well. And you also want to know like how you feel in their presence. Do you feel like a wonderful version of you, the version of you that you want to be? Do you find yourself constantly being insecure? Are you being triggered? Those are all things to be aware of. And it does not mean that you shouldn't be in that relationship, but they're things to have your eyes open to. But now I'm going to jump into some of the things that don't get talked about that much that I think are really rich and really important. So I want to say something about the giddiness of early love. I think that as we grow up, we tend to like feel a little bit embarrassed about, like if we're kind of falling for somebody, if it's a really exciting time, if we're like waiting for their text and acting kind of like giddy and silly and nervous and all of those kind of like teenage emotions, it's very easy to kind of think that we should stomp that down and get rational. And yes, it is absolutely true that we do not want to act on those feelings in inappropriate ways, in ways that are going to feel suffocating to the other person, et cetera, et cetera. But what I think we don't get taught is that we do get to love that adolescent giddiness where you like want to write your name and the other person's name on your notebook, where you're thinking about them a lot, where you just have that kind of silliness and giddiness and you're doing some fantasizing. Stopping that and blocking that doesn't really work, because what happens is then this very natural joy at the magic of early romance, you squash it. And when you squash it, it turns into neediness, or it turns into frozenness, or it turns into friend zone. We don't want fear to squelch that joy that we get. We want to have it. And I want to share a story about this from my own life. I had fallen in love with someone. This person was an artist and sent me the most incredible pieces of little art and big art and amazing art. And I was just like completely besotten and so excited. And it was the beginning of a serious relationship. And I remember talking to, as a psychotherapist, she was my supervisor. And I used, I think, like two entire sessions just to like bubble over and show this art and talk about this new relationship. And at the end of that second session, I said to her, "Lynn, I am actually feeling really embarrassed. Like I feel like a giddy schoolgirl." And she said something so cool. She said, "You know, Ken, enjoy this while it lasts. This is like this wonderful, wonderful warmth, and you want to enjoy it and you want to bottle it and delight in it. Because as the relationship continues, you're going to want the memories of that to come back to. That will feed you when things get difficult, when things get more complicated. So give yourself the gift of that joy, that giddiness." So that's something I want to share with all of you. Yeah, you got to watch your behaviors. If that giddiness is making you do things that are not good for the relationship or not good for you, that's not good. But for you to delight in that giddiness is not only wonderful, but if you don't do it, it will come out sideways in some strange way. Here's another thing that I'm going to mention kind of briefly, although it's wildly important, but it's something I've talked about in other episodes. This is what I call the wave of distancing. Some people have called it the ick, which I think is a kind of superficial and limited way of understanding this. But the wave of distancing is you meet somebody, you like them, there is mutual attraction. And all of a sudden, like as there's not that drama anymore, and it feels like they're just like there, their market value in your head starts to plummet. You become disinterested, bored, judgmental. You want to push them away. You think, "I want to go back to the thrill of the hunt." And you know, maybe even you're conscious of the thought of, "I wouldn't want to belong to any country club that would have me as a member." But maybe that's unconscious and you just feel like, "Oh, I want to get away," or "Ugh." Or all of a sudden things about them bother you that didn't bother you before. You feel suffocated, etc. So I was single for decades because of this. I didn't have the tools to work with it. I didn't understand it. What I thought was I was just immature, which I was. But I thought that, and I thought that it was hopeless, or I thought that, I guess, just the other person is not right for me, even though they were right for me until all of a sudden they started to look really available. Then all of a sudden they became kind of not so right for me. I didn't know what to do about that and what to do about the wave. But when I am in a group of people and I ask how many people know what I'm talking about, I would say a half to two-thirds of the room raise their hand and say they relate. And actually, when this happens, it's a sign that you're with someone who is available, quite possibly. And so this is, like I said, like this is something that happens with available people. So if you are not used to drama-free and available folks, then this is going to feel boring to you. It did to me with my husband at first, on and off. This wave would come. I'd be like crazy, crazy in love with him. And then all of a sudden, whatever would happen that would make me feel claustrophobic or suffocated or afraid. And all of a sudden I would think, what am I doing here? I should escape. I knew enough at that point not to escape. And I knew the trick to the wave. And I'm going to tell you what the trick is. It's twofold. One, do not flee. Two, do not pressure yourself. Take space, take air. What the wave is a spasm of fear in most cases. If you let yourself back up, don't put pressure on yourself. Enjoy the person. Don't have dates that are too heavy or too intense. Just enjoy them. Just enjoy them. And don't flee. If you do that, almost definitely something amazing is going to happen. This feeling of distancing is going to pass. And with that, you will have a clearer sense of if they are right for you or not. We do not get taught about this. And it's just so incredibly important because it's a kind of fear of intimacy. And that's the next thing I want to talk about is your fear. Expect to have bouts of fear and they'll come out strangely and you'll feel weird about them. Maybe your sexual interest will wane in ways that scare you and you think, oh God, I'm not attracted to this person anymore. Maybe you'll find yourself being really judgmental. Maybe you'll find yourself like really looking hard to see, could there be someone better out there? Or maybe you don't do it, but you want to do it. All of these kind of feelings, or you start thinking this person is just that, those things are kind of like the wave, but you might think, oh, this person is just not right for me. They are too this or not enough this, or they live too far away, et cetera, et cetera. You will have spasms of fear. I do 6-month intensives for people that want to follow this path. And I tell people early on, I say, you're in a group of 12 people, you know that we're going to go deep. It'll be gentle, but it's going to be really deep. And your psyche knows that. So expect to have bouts of fear, which will probably look like the other people are not at my level. I'm not at the other people's level. They're too screwed up. I'm too screwed up. I don't have time. I'm too busy. They won't understand me, et cetera, et cetera. And I tell people, this fear is a treasure because in a new relationship, you will probably have a very similar fear. But now you can work through it here and it's obviously less loaded than a romantic situation. And you have me to help coach you. So use it as a learning. Like, oh, this is what happens for me when I get afraid in an early relationship. And this is something I tell people all the time. Fear of intimacy is not a pathology. If you are breathing, you have fear of intimacy. And those of us that have had relationships that have been traumatic and painful for us, oh my God, we will have fear of intimacy because we don't want to have that same pain again. So allow space for your fear of intimacy. Get to know it. Get to understand it. Get to understand your flight patterns. When you get afraid, how do you choreograph distance consciously and unconsciously? And allow room for your fear. You can even say to your partner, I'm feeling afraid, or I'm feeling shut down. It's a brave, brave thing, but it's part of the deeper skills of intimacy. And here is another one that is a really exciting one. Stretch in terms of what you ask for. Think about what your needs are And don't shelve some of your bigger asks that are important to you. I'm going to share a story with you. It's in my book, but it's a friend of mine who was single for a really long time, and she met this guy. She really liked him. They were on a hike together. She had just read The Rules. So she was really trying to do that thing of like, as a woman, I'm not going to ask for much. I'm not going to demand much. I'm going to kind of play hard to get, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, she found some benefit in that stuff and she was doing it. But with this guy, she didn't want to do it. And they were somewhat early in their connection and they were on a hike together. And they sat down and they like opened up their picnic basket. And she said to him, she said, "All right, so I really need to say this. I need to tell you this. I am someone who wants to get married. I'm someone who wants to have kids. I am not saying that's where we are right now. We are just beginning, but I want to be upfront about these being really important needs for me." And he looked at her and he said, "Where do I sign?" They're still together, happily married with wonderful kids. I love that story because she did not shelve her asks. And I want to invite all of you not to shelve your asks because of insecurity. Because if you do your ask in a way, asks are actually an act of generosity. They let your partner be generous and they let you be vulnerable. And there's a deep generosity in vulnerability. So someone from the intensive actually coined this concept of don't shelve your asks early on. Ask them and see who your partner is. And you will learn so much if you allow yourself to swing out in your asks. And then they get to do the same as well. So these are things that we're not really taught. In fact, we're kind of taught not to do in early relationships, but I think that they are wonderful things to do. If you find that you're feeling stuck, get help. Find friends who like know you, understand you, are not going to give you bad advice, have your back, have wisdom, have done work on themselves, are not going to pressure you or be demanding, are going to give you space, but are going to encourage you as well. Or find a coach or find a therapist or join a group like my intensive. Don't be alone with your fears and your questions. Because here's the deal. If you met someone wonderful, that is of incalculable value or potentially wonderful, that is so incredibly valuable. It is worth doing the work. It is worth taking the time. It is worth also allowing yourself to remain in uncertainty if it feels like there's something special here. You can remain in uncertainty and still stay present. And you can remain in uncertainty as long as you feel uncertain. The other person is an adult. As long as you're honest and not lying, they can take care of themselves. Sometimes it takes a while to know if a relationship is right. So don't run out too quickly if it's someone really special. And if you have a tendency to run out, get help and get support. And then the last thing I want to say is this. If you've been doing real work on yourself and your own growth, something can happen that I call a stepping stone relationship. And it's complicated. And here's what it is. You meet someone and all of a sudden they're not like the other people. And you're like, my work has really paid off. I'm with someone who's present, who's available, who's honest, who sees me for who I am. All of those things are real. But often, when we are changing and up-leveling our own approach to love, we up-level the kind of people we meet. But you still need time to check in with your nervous system to see how trustworthy that person is, because it may be progress, but it may still be a stepping stone. And that's something that happens for a lot of people. So another reason to give it time, to not shelve your asks, to be real, but also to treasure the wonderfulness of what you found, because that's a big deal. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to connecting on the next episode of the Deeper Dating Podcast.
And that's it for today's episode of Deeper Dating. Be sure to go to deeperdatingpodcast.com as Ken has a few more gifts for you. Then join us on the next episode.